Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Wake up to a delicious morning with your favorite McDonald's breakfast sandwiches, now just $2, only in the app. Choose from a bacon, egg, and cheese biscuit, sausage McMuffin, or bacon, egg, and cheese McGriddles, just $2, only in the app. That's a deal as irresistible as the sandwiches themselves. Plus, you'll save time by ordering ahead in the app. Offer valid one time per day from July 29th through September 1st at participating McDonald's. Must opt in to rewards.
Have you ever wanted to learn a new language, but just didn't have the time or money? I may have a solution for you. Her name is Jessica, and she gives free Chinese lessons daily at 11 p.m. Beijing time and 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. Chinese is fun and easy if you have the right teacher. Let Jessica be that teacher and introduce yourself to the fastest growing language in the international job market today at tinyurl.com/tcjessica and tell her Ian sent you.
Do you like fine art but think it might be out of your price range? Do you have a vision for a painting that you'd like to see brought to life but you just don't have the skill? I might have a solution for you. Art by Daisy. With decades of experience, Daisy offers high-quality, affordable watercolor paintings suitable for hanging in your home, office, or even as a gift. With prices starting at just $55, visit tinyurl.com/artbydaisy to find out more.
Hello and welcome to the DeathCast. I'm your host, author, and journalist Ian Tott, and I'd like to thank you for joining me as we prepare to take our second look at the murder of Polly Kloss. As always, before we get going, couple of show announcements. The show is going through some upheavals at the moment due to things going on in my personal life, and I am hoping to get the show back onto its normal schedule beginning next week. Also, if you'd like to follow the show on social media, just search for The DeathCast, DeathCast Official, or DeathCast Podcast on any one of your favorite social media platforms. If you'd like to help support the show, there's a couple of ways you can do this. First and foremost, you can go to tinyurl.com/DCastPatreon, where for as little as $1.99 a month, you can get access to early ad-free shows, as well as exclusive content, just like my friends Channel and Anthony have done. You can also go to your favorite podcast app, follow the show, and leave a 5-star review. All right, now that all that is out of the way, find yourself a nice comfy chair. Kick back and relax. I've got my coffee. I've got my cigarettes. Let's go into the crypt. When we left off last time, the police had zeroed in on Richard Allen Davis. We were discussing his exceedingly lengthy rap sheet, which, as with many perpetrators, escalated as he moved from his teen years into adulthood. On March 22, 1985, Davis was arrested in Modesto, California, after a CHP officer noticed that the car they were driving had a defective taillight. With him in this car was his then-girlfriend, Susan Edwards. The pair had warrants out for their arrest for robbing a yogurt shop as well as the Delta National Bank, both of which were in Modesto. And it's going to be many, many years until all of their crimes come to light. But the important thing to note from this particular arrest is that Davis begins to turn on Susan Edwards as he feels that she hasn't kept up her part of the bargain that they had, which was that she would support him no matter what while he was incarcerated, as he had planned to take the rap for her. Instead, Davis ends up giving evidence against Edwards. She gets a fairly light prison sentence. He gets 16 years. Edwards gets out and becomes engaged to
Davis, although this eventually falls apart. And it appears that Davis had a fairly quiet time during this prison stretch, where he serves 8 years. In 1993, Davis ends up being paroled. This is on June 27th, 1993. He moves into a halfway house and takes a job working as a sheet metal fabricator. With this job, he saves his money and ends up buying a white Ford Pinto. Some of this we've gone over already. On October 19th, 1993, after the disappearance of Polly Kloss, Davis is arrested in Ukiah for drunk driving. He's issued a summons to appear in court, although he never does. On November 30th of 1993, he is arrested at the Coyote Valley Indian Reservation, which is north of Ukiah, and it's with this arrest that he is identified as the primary suspect in Polly Kloss's disappearance. The police in Petaluma begin to question Davis, and he's very evasive in his answers. According to one of the detectives who questioned Davis, quote, "The goal at the time was to find out where Polly was. I think what I tried to do with him was treat him with as much dignity and respect that I could afford to another human being. There are people I know that don't feel that way because of what he says he has done, but I never talked down to him. I had a conversation with him. It was done in such a way that he wasn't backed into a corner, per se." Davis begins to open up to the officers, telling them that he had in fact arrived in Petaluma with the intention of finding his mother. However, he encountered a group of men who were selling marijuana, and he purchased some from them. He then states that it was his belief that this marijuana was laced with angel dust, also known as PCP, and that because of this, his memory after smoking the joint that he had rolled becomes foggy. It's important to note that Davis's parole stated very specifically that drug testing was a requirement of his parole, and that the day after Polly went missing, Davis had actually taken a piss test and passed it. So the idea that he was under the influence is highly doubtful. And you get that a lot with individuals such as Davis, where they don't want to admit just exactly what they have done. They know that they are on the hook for it. So rather than completely tell the truth, they will try to introduce mitigating circumstances in order to make their crimes less distasteful to the individuals trying to learn about them, and also to lessen their responsibility for having committed those crimes. You see this a lot when you get individuals who have committed crimes against children. They will introduce the usage of a mind-altering substance. Whether it's true or not is besides the point, but it is their belief mentally that by doing so, they will be able to lessen their culpability for the crime. However, this rarely, if ever, works when presented in open court. When pressed further about the evening of Polly's disappearance, Davis admitted to having broken into her house, although he stated he could not recall even going there, nor could he give a reason as to why he had kidnapped her. Officers noted that during this confession, Davis oftentimes became somewhat emotional, with tears threatening to spill from his eyes.
At one point during his confession, Davis informed the officers that, quote, "ain't got to show me no consideration or no respect. I know I'm a piece of shit." Davis then went on to explain that after kidnapping Polly, he drove around aimlessly with no clear-cut idea of what he was going to do with the child or where he was going to go. He also said that during this drive, he untied Polly. Davis then stated that as he was driving, he ended up out by Dana Jaffe's house, and that it was during this time he got stuck in the mud. And because of this, he decided that he needed to get Polly out of the car, so he removed her from the vehicle and walked her out into the woods before going back to the vehicle. Now keep that in mind, he stated that he walked Polly out into the woods and left her there alive and untied. Went back to the car, and it was at this point that the officers arrived who would eventually help him with getting the car unstuck. Davis then states that after the officers left, he doubled back and went to the area where he had left Polly. He found the little girl sleeping, and she stated, quote, "I thought you had left me." Davis then states to the officers that he contemplated what he should do with Polly. He knew that by kidnapping this young girl, he was most certainly going back to the penitentiary. He then states, and I quote, "I decided the best way to handle this was to kill the broad in my car." That is a term often used by what has been dubbed currently as misogynists, used to be called a male chauvinist pig, for women that the male does not think highly of. Usually these are the same type of men who refer to any woman that sleeps with others besides themselves, or who will not sleep with them, as sluts and whores. Keep in mind, he's talking about a 12-year-old girl. And while the kidnapping charge would have gotten him a lengthy prison sentence, murdering Polly will most certainly get him a life sentence, if not the death penalty. So his logic in this particular part of the tale is absolutely flawed, as is much of Davis's mindset from the start of his life. It also should be noted that Davis's statement that he had left Polly on a hillside completely untied is very doubtful. Even if the girl was terrified, it is highly unlikely that she would have remained where she was, or that she would have been excited to see Davis upon his return. Officers then ask Davis if he had sexually assaulted or molested Polly in any fashion, to which Davis stated, quote, "I don't think so." When asked about it again, he said, quote, "Well, as much as I can remember, I don't think I did," before stating, "On my skin, I didn't do nothing to her." And that's a assertion he has continued to hold. While all of this is going on, the Sonoma County Sheriff's Department and many, many other agencies conducted another search at the location where they believed Polly had been murdered and where her body had been left. When I say this was a massive search, there were over 500 members of law enforcement involved in this search, not limited to authorities from California, but also from the FBI. This was on December 3rd through December 4th, and there were plans to continue the search the following day, December 5th. However, Davis confesses that night, stating that he had strangled Polly from behind before moving her body, at which point Davis agreed to lead investigators to Polly's remains, which were just off of Highway 101. Now, some sources state that her body had simply been left in a field, while others that she had been buried in a shallow grave. And it may be a mixture of the two. She had lain out in the elements for a period of time, and it's almost certain that Davis had attempted to obstruct anyone's finding of her body by throwing debris from the surrounding areas over her. I highly doubt that he took the time to actually dig a hole in the ground and place her in there. Polly's body was found without a head and had suffered a good deal of decomposition. The nightgown that she was wearing was pulled up over her hips and her legs were spread wide, indicating to the officers that despite his assertions that he had not violated her in any way other than taking her life, it appeared to the officers that Polly Klass had unfortunately indeed been sexually assaulted by Richard Allen Davis. I'm going to read a part from an article in the Los Angeles Times, which came out during Davis's trial. And this was taken from an Associated Press writer. Graphic testimony in Klass trial forces family out of court, May 7th, 1996. San Jose, a doctor who performed the autopsy on Polly Klass, testified Monday to the pitiful state of her remains, a litany of horrors that sent her family fleeing from the courtroom. Later in the day, three jurors wept as they looked at photographs of Polly's small, headless body, partially clad in child's flannel nightgown. Others grimaced and appeared to be fighting for control. The photographs were not displayed to the courtroom audience, but prosecutor Greg Jacobs said they showed the decomposed body, which had lain in a field for about 2 months. Earlier, a doctor who had performed the autopsy, A.J. Chapman, had testified about the extent of decomposition. Parts of the body were mummified, others were reduced to the skeleton, Chapman said. The testimony, delivered in a matter-of-fact monotone, proved too much for the 12-year-old's family. Her father, grandfather, and grandmother left the courtroom shortly after Chapman began talking, with her grandmother, B.J. Klass, blinking back tears. Outside the courtroom, Polly's father, Mark Klass, said he could not listen to the details of his daughter's fate. "This is terrible stuff. My Lord, I've got an image of Polly in my mind, and I can't let that go. I can't let that go," he said. Chapman said the state of the body made it impossible to determine the exact cause of death, but he said pieces of cloth and rope found in her hair, each tied into loops approximately 3 inches in diameter, indicated she was strangled. Chapman spoke at length on the process of decomposition and how the presence of animals and insects can affect it. He said because of the decay, it was impossible to detect the presence of semen. There was no identifiable remnant of any organ, he said. The question of whether or not defendant Richard Allen Davis sexually molested Polly has become a key issue in a trial where the defense has already conceded Davis committed the crimes he's been charged with. But defense attorney Barry Collins maintains there is no evidence he molested her. Davis is not charged with sexual assault, but with an attempted lewd act on a minor. Even without that charge, he could face the death penalty, but it is believed the sex charge could have an emotional impact on jurors. Outside the courtroom, prosecutor Greg Jacobs said he did not think the lack of forensic evidence damaged his case. He said, "Proving an attempted lewd act does not require such evidence." Chapman said the body was found with the legs splayed apart and clothing pushed above the waist. So the area where Davis led authorities to Polly's body was roughly 30 miles from the area where they believed she had been murdered and left. Officers have later stated that it's their belief that Polly Klass was in fact dead prior to the officers discovering him stuck in the ditch, and that he had hid Polly's body either in the trunk of his car or in the bushes up the hillside.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Wake up to a delicious morning with your favorite McDonald's breakfast sandwiches, now just $2, only in the app. Choose from a bacon, egg, and cheese biscuit, sausage McMuffin, or bacon, egg, and cheese McGriddles, just $2, only in the app. That's a deal as irresistible as the sandwiches themselves. Plus, you'll save time by ordering ahead in the app. Offer valid one time per day from July 29th through September 1st at participating McDonald's. Must opt in to rewards.
From where officers found him, and that Davis had, in fact, returned after officers had helped him get the car out to retrieve the body. It's also stated by some officers that they believe that the area where Polly's body was discovered had been chosen in advance, as it was visible from Highway 101, and that it was in the path that Davis had to travel weekly from the halfway house he was staying at the Indian Reservation to meet with his patrol officer, thus allowing him to see whether or not there was any form of police activity in that specific area. On December 7th, 1993, Davis is officially charged with kidnapping and murder of Polly Klass. He is also going to be charged with attempted lewd act on a child. And the reason that this particular charge is put in is due to the fact of how decomposed Polly's body was, and the fact that due to this composition and exposure to the elements, they were unable to unequivocally show whether or not Polly had been sexually assaulted by Richard Allen Davis. My belief is that she almost certainly had, in fact, been assaulted by Davis, as evidenced by the fact of how her body was discovered. You see this quite often in cases such as this. A great example is Gary Ridgway, the Green River Killer. He is known to have left some of his victims in a sexually explicit pose after he has disposed of them. And this is done to both taunt authorities, horrify those who find her, but also to show their contempt for the victim and what they actually saw the victim as, which is simply a object for sexual gratification. I think that it's very possible that Davis may have done more to Polly after he killed her, although we'll never know for certain. He may have decided that after he molested or raped her and then killed her, he wanted to further denigrate her and committed the act again once he was at the area where he left her body. However, it is also possible that he did not kill her where officers initially encountered Davis, but in fact had put her in the woods, knowing that he was going to get in some sort of interaction with law enforcement. And when they did not discover her, he came back and removed her and then committed the act of murder where Polly's body was discovered. Now, obviously, Davis's arrest is a major deal, and because of this, a judge orders that Davis not be tried in Petaluma.
but will instead be tried in Santa Clara County. Give you an idea of the layout of California, you have Petaluma, which is in Sonoma County, which is closer to San Francisco. Under that, you have Santa Clara County, where you have the cities of Santa Cruz, San Jose, Gilroy, Watsonville, Morgan Hill, a town that we discussed in the last series that I did on the crimes of Leonard Lake and Charles Ngong, an area that I actually lived in for a considerable period of time. It was thought by the judge that Davis had a better than average chance of getting a fair trial in Santa Clara County. So he's actually going to stand trial at the courthouse in San Jose. Davis is officially charged with murder and kidnapping with special circumstances. The special circumstances in this particular case being the attempted sexual assault of a minor. And this was done in order to get Davis eligible for the death penalty. Now, his lawyers, for their part, never discounted the fact that Davis had committed these crimes. Their sole purpose was to prove that he was suffering from mental illness and that he had not, in fact, molested Polly's body in any way, shape, or form. I'm not going to disagree with their assertion that Davis was and is still suffering from mental illness. However, I do not believe that in this particular case, given the crime that he committed as well as previous crimes for which he had been convicted, that Davis was in a diminished capacity when he committed the crimes against Polly. Davis's defense team characterized the kidnapping and murder of Polly Klass as being a robbery gone wrong, which was due to the fact that Davis was suffering from a confused mental state. One of the unique things that the prosecution did during the trial was to actually put members of Polly's family on the stand. And this was done to show the jurors the type of damage that Polly's kidnapping and murder had done to them. Polly's grandfather stated while on the stand that his granddaughter's murder was worse than anything he had witnessed while serving in World War II. While her father, fighting back tears, stated, "Everything reminds me. Every time I see a pretty 12-year-old girl, I am reminded of Polly. I can't sleep. I can't concentrate. Everything is in ruins." On June 18, 1996, the jury unanimously found Richard Allen Davis guilty of the kidnapping and murder of Polly Klass with special circumstances, which means that there were only two options on the table as far as Davis's sentencing was concerned: either life without the possibility of parole or the death sentence. Upon hearing the verdict, Davis, sitting at the defense table, lifted both of his hands and flipped off the courtroom. I'm going to warn you that this is the least offensive thing that Richard Allen Davis does from this point onward. When we get to the next part, which is the actual sentencing phase, Davis shows not only the Klass family and the court, but the entire world what an absolutely miserable, useless piece of shit he is as a human being. Obviously, there were victim impact statements given during the sentencing phase. At one point, Mark Klass addressed the court and stated that if Davis were not given the death penalty, quote, "it would allow evil to triumph over good. Mr. Davis, When you get to where you're going, say hello to Hitler, to Dahmer, and to Bundy. Good riddance, and the sooner you get there, the better we'll all be. After more victim impact statements, Richard Allen Davis was allowed to address the court. At this point, I'm going to play a few clips from a news program. These are specifically Mark Class speaking to the courtroom. Richard Allen Davis's statements to the court, as well as the judge's statements to the court. You're also going to hear Polly's grandfather speak after the sentence is officially handed down.
He has made innocent people suffer, and truly the honorable way out would be for him to commit suicide. It's the least he can do to alleviate our pain. But since he does not have the goodness or the courage within him to take even that step, the state is placed in the terrible situation of having to make that decision for him. The contract for that, he must die. And Mr. Davis, when you get to where you're going, say hello to Hitler, say hello to Dahmer, and say hello to Bundy. And good riddance, and the sooner you get there, the better we all are.
Here is part of Richard Allen Davis's statement to the court after Mark Class addressed them.
Nichols and her family, for what it's worth, I do offer my sincere apology. To certain members of the Kloss family, I also offer the same. I would also like to state for the record that the main reason I know that I did not attempt any lewd act that night is because of a statement the young girl made to me when walking her up the embankment. Just don't do me like my dad. I have to pay my dues, so should you.
Where in hell, Davis?
So what Davis said there, if it was hard to hear, was that Polly said to him, please don't do me like my dad. Inferring that she was stating that her father had sexually molested her. Obviously, Davis's words had an effect on Mark Class, who told Davis to burn in hell before screaming expletives at Davis and attempting to attack him. Officers quickly subdued the grieving father and hustled him out of the courtroom. The judge then goes on to read his recommendation for the sentencing of Davis, and I'm going to play that at this point.
This is always a traumatic and emotional decision for a judge. You've made it very easy today by your conduct.
With that, the judge sentences Davis to death. Now, outside the courthouse afterwards, both Polly's grandfather and her father spoke to reporters, and I'm going to play both of them at this point. Polly's grandfather first, followed by her father, Mark.
This man succeeded in what he was trying to do, which was pierce my son through the heart and pierce the rest of the family. It was just plain despicable, and it shows the kind of people child molesters are.
It shows the degree and how far he will go to continue to manipulate people and to continue to try and pour on the suffering and the pain and the agony.
So Davis goes on to San Quentin, where California's death row is located. He has since been moved, as the state of California has moved all of their death row inmates to another prison. Now, Davis has attempted to appeal his conviction on a number of occasions. In 2009, he said that his jailhouse confession was inadmissible as evidence in court, as he had not had a lawyer present. This is the confession that Davis gave when he was questioned by officers in December of 1993. On June 1st of that year, the California Supreme Court ruled unanimously against him. We know that Davis has continued his life of crime behind bars.
using and selling drugs. And it's known that in 2006 he was found unresponsive in his cell from an overdose. Unfortunately, he was revived. While her family has continued to try and keep Polly's story alive, while also trying to help other child victims. The Polly Klaas Foundation ran up until a year or two ago when her father officially dissolved it. And I would love to get an interview with Mark Klaas, because I really do think that people need to know more about the type of individual that Richard Allen Davis is, as well as the work that he and the foundation that he headed have done to try and help these victims. Now, we're going to get into a little bit of a bashing portion now. In other cases I've discovered, I have discussed the fact that I take extreme issue with individuals using a family's tragedy, the murder of a loved one, to spin a yarn which has no sense of basis in reality. There is a conspiracy theory going around online, which was perpetuated mostly by an author by the name of Frank Spierling, that Polly Klaas was not killed by Richard Allen Davis, and that in fact another individual who was reported to have been seen near the Klaas home on the night of her kidnapping was responsible for this, and that Polly had in fact been sold as a sex slave. He based this on very scant evidence, but unfortunately some people within the true crime community have latched onto this as being part and parcel fact, and that she is in fact alive and being abused. I take a lot of issue with people who do this type of thing when the evidence that is available and has been tested time and again proves this kind of thing to be untrue. The reason I take issue with it is because, to me, it is absolutely unethical to do this, as, again, you are making money off of a family's pain and suffering by putting out information that has no basis in reality, but more than that, information that cannot be even tangentially verified as being remotely true. The reason I take issue with this type of quote-unquote reporting is because it muddles the facts of what actually happened, and it allows people to continue to spin these fantastical yarns, while the reality of the case and the situation is lost to the sidelines as people focus on these bullshit assertions instead of the facts of the case. Richard Allen Davis murdered Polly Klaas. He almost certainly sexually assaulted her, and because of California's spineless government, he will almost certainly remain on California's death row unpunished for his crimes until he passes away from natural causes. We are at the end of this week's episode. I hope that you have enjoyed my coverage of the Polly Klaas case. And again, I apologize for the delay in the release of this episode. And I am hoping to be back on track next week when we cover a brand new case. Until then, the DeathCast is a co-production of Corpse Creek Publishing in association with Big Pond Podcasts. Stay morbid!